The next week was busy, and Duncan was disappointed to find that he and Sebastian could rarely meet for more than an hour, and then usually just before darkness fell. Twice Duncan was caught outside too late, and only made his way home safely because of the mostly full moon. He knew Sebastian was arriving home late, also, and wondered if his brothers thought anything of it. He hoped not. The week after that was little better. Sunday afternoon was the only time they were able to spend together. With the end of summer approaching, they each had too much to do to have much leisure time. Duncan dreamed of snowy days and having Sebastian over to sit by the fire. It was only a dream, he knew. Sebastian could no more come to the MacLeod farm than Duncan could go to the McKay one. In reality, he should dread the coming of winter, since it would keep them from being able to meet outside, in secret. Duncan smiled to himself when he thought of meeting Sebastian amongst the apple trees, amongst the graves. Every and any small alcove of grass and shaded bit of soft ground offered them a hidden entry to intimacy. Duncan reached for one of the apples he now always carried with him. He bit into it, and it was juicy and more sweet than tart, and reminded him of his lover. Apple thief, he thought, and his heart grew even more fond with the memory. It was late afternoon, and Duncan had finally chopped and stacked the first cord of wood in preparation for winter, when the carriage came up the road. He paused and watched it kick up dust behind it. It stopped in front of the house, and Tom Maccabee and his wife climbed down from it. Rona came to the door, drying her hands on her apron as she brought her guests in, and then gestured for Duncan to come inside also. A weary feeling churned over in the pit of Duncan's stomach. He took a moment to clean off the worst at the pump, then followed them in. After the dazzling late summer sunshine, the interior of the house seemed dark and cave-like. Rona ushered him into the sitting room, where Tom and Mrs. Maccabee were seated. Tom stood up when Duncan came in, and Duncan nodded his head to both of them. For the life of him, he couldn't remember Mrs. Maccabee's first name. Her proud bearing and stiff neck brought to mind the nobility of other lands, as if she were indeed a lady. "Let me be very blunt, Mr. MacLeod," Tom started, and went on to be anything but. He paced for a moment. "I had hoped that things might work themselves out naturally, but it doesn't seem the case. Time is of the essence, it seems, as we all know that your intentions are not to stay in our fair town for more than another year. Now that does bother me, I must say, because this is quite a picturesque spot, and I can't see why you wouldn't want to stay. And you must understand that while I love my daughters, they are daughters, and they need to be cared for." He rubbed a hand through his hair. "I wish I had a son, but some things aren't meant to be. But sons aside," Tom said, and looked pointedly at Duncan. "I'm going to be straight with you, sir. I'm not one to watch as a poor girl's heart is broken." Duncan nodded his understanding. "This is about Margaret?" Mr. Maccabee huffed for a moment. "Of course this is about Margaret. Haven't you been listening?" Mrs. Maccabee smiled and touched her husband's arm. He looked at her and sat down. "Mr. MacLeod, we've come to discuss the possibility of your marrying our daughter." Her voice was level and constant. "I'm very sorry," Duncan began, "but my intentions are not to marry your daughter." "I'm a very wealthy man," Tom started, then broke off when his wife touched his arm again. "Financially, you wouldn't have a thing to worry about, Mr. MacLeod. We would take great care to help support you and Margaret until any business you started had done well. Or you could take over for Tom." Still, her voice was calm and very persuasive. "I'm not a bauble to be bought," he said, slightly more hotly than he meant. He walked to the window and looked out at the field that was visible. His next words came out calmer. "You have a very lovely daughter, and any man would be happy to have her for a wife. But I am not any man. I apologize for my brusqueness, but I am not interested in marrying Margaret. I regret that she had the impression that I would, and I have since told her that I would not, but the fact still remains." "Are you going to marry at all?" Mrs. Maccabee asked. An image of Sebastian flashed through Duncan's mind. Perhaps not marry, he thought, but spend as much time as possible with the one I love and desire. Yes, that I intend to do. No, Duncan said. Mrs. Maccabee's fine features drew down in consternation. You hesitated before you answered that. Is there possibly someone you are thinking of, fond of? Duncan frowned, not liking the question at all. It was none of their business. It does not matter, he told them, whether I have someone in mind or not, because my intentions regarding Margaret are plain. She's a beautiful girl, but I don't want to marry her. Please! Tom stood up and went to Duncan, taking his hand in his own. My daughter pines for you. You will break her heart. Duncan put his free hand on Tom's shoulder. I'm sorry, but that is all there is to it. He paused, and when neither of the Maccabees seemed able to say anything else, but just pleaded with their eyes, he said, Please excuse me. I've some things to finish. He passed Rona at the doorway as he left, and she patted his shoulder and whispered to him, You've a wise head, Duncan. Spoiled daughters like Margaret make only spoiled wives. Her somber eyes turned to indicate the doting parents. Make haste while you may. He nodded and went back out into the amber sunshine. The wood was stacked, and since he couldn't stay near the farmhouse until the Maccabees left, Duncan gladly headed towards the orchard. It was near enough to harvesting time, he thought. He should taste the apples to see how sweet they fared. And perhaps Sebastian might be there waiting, too. It happened for the first time the next morning. Katie Firth was found drowned in the stream. Rona brought back the news from town, where she had gone to purchase some sugar. Duncan and Eller stared wordlessly at her over the dinner table. What happened? Duncan finally asked. No one knows. She was in her bed last night, as far as her parents know. Everyone is distraught, especially her fiancé. It looks like an accident, but there were marks on her throat. Rona took a sip of her tea and rattled the cup back onto the saucer. They can't figure how she got out of the house without anyone hearing. It's an old house and creaks like mad when the floorboards are trod upon. Plus, why ever would she sneak out in the middle of the night? Eller shook his head. 'Tis a bad business, to be sure. The constable is investigating, Duncan asked. Of course. But everyone wants it to be an accident. Whoever would want a fine young girl like that dead? She was a beauty, and so very friendly and kind. It is a terrible tragedy. And for the family also. They haven't any other daughters, you know. Saddened, they lapsed into silence with their own thoughts, and the food was quickly eaten. Duncan played with his last biscuit, remembering how pretty Katie had been when he'd seen her last Sunday at church, and how terribly young. Well, Rona said, when dinner was finished, you two go on and rest. There are things to do tomorrow. We'll be helping with the wake and funeral. Course, Eller agreed. We're first of kin with the Firths. Wouldn't be right if we didn't help. Duncan nodded agreement, although he was ignorant of any actual familial ties with the Firths, and went up to bed thinking his own dark thoughts. The next several days were very busy. It had been a long time since Duncan had been present for all the doings surrounding a death, and he'd forgotten how much there was to accomplish. He beat the rugs when asked, and helped Rona deliver baskets of food, and also performed any odd task that needed to be done. By the time the wake started, he was tired out, and had settled himself in a seat near the door so he could watch the coming and going. The Maccabees were the first to arrive. Tom and Lady Maccabee, Duncan couldn't get the sobriquet out of his head, were solemn and spoke in hushed tones. Elise and Margaret clung to each other, sobbing, as they looked on their friend. When they were done speaking with the family, Margaret came to sit with him. I'm sorry about your friend, Duncan told her. It is so terrible. Margaret lapsed into another fit of crying. Daintily she daubed at her eyes. What will you do now? Me? Yes, she asked breathlessly. Your fiancé. I wasn't engaged to Katie. He watched as Margaret's chin trembled and her eyes grew wide. I thought she was engaged to John Weston. Duncan furtively pointed to a gaunt-cheeked youth sitting near the coffin. Every so often he would reach over and pat Katie's hands as if he were still trying to wake her. What? Oh, Margaret stared across the room. Who told you that she and I were engaged? I'd heard something, Margaret muttered, after church last week. Duncan shook his head. He remembered the incident. Katie had tripped as they'd entered church, and Duncan had kept her from falling. She'd kissed him lightly on the cheek in thanks, and had confided in a whisper that she'd been ill and was only just leaving home, and had dared to come to church even though she wasn't quite well and her fiancé was out of town on business. Duncan had immediately kept her by his side for the entire service and escorted her home with her parents. It wasn't what it seemed, he told her. At the time, Margaret gathered herself, as well as the folds of her dress. "So I suppose you haven't changed your intentions towards me?" she asked stiffly. "You'd rather be a lonely bachelor than marry a woman who loves you?" "Margaret," he began, but enough of his answer must have shown in his face such that Margaret didn't stay to hear it. After she was gone, Duncan realized that the McKay family also had come to call. A line of tall men followed in at the heels of one diminutive woman and her husband, and Duncan could see the family resemblance in all of them. He watched six unknown brothers walk by, each one a variation on a theme, and then the last brother, whom he did know. Sebastian saw him and winked, then sobered and followed his family into the room holding Katie. Duncan waited somewhat anxiously, although he kept his exterior as unaffected as he could. It was the first time he'd seen Sebastian in public, and the first time they'd been together where Duncan could not just reach out and touch as he pleased. He thought about sitting on his hands. Finally, Sebastian came over to see him, one brother in tow. He smiled and made the introductions. "Duncan, this is my brother Aiden. He's the oldest. I told you about him." Duncan stood and extended a hand, which Aiden accepted, and they shook. "I'm glad to meet you." "Glad to meet you, too," Aiden said. "Sebastian's told me you've let him try out some of your apple crop this season." Aiden grinned crookedly, and Duncan decided he immediately liked this brother. "Well, yes, he's been very diligent at making sure none of our trees are going sour." Duncan grinned back and wondered what else Sebastian might have mentioned to his brother. Aiden leaned in. "I'm glad Sebastian's found a friend. He tends to be too much of a loner. If he ever gives you too much trouble, let me know, and I'll make sure he stays on the McKay side of the stream." "Oh, he's no trouble," Duncan replied. Sebastian nudged his brother. "Stop! You act as if I'm still knee-high. I'm an adult, you know. You don't get to boss me anymore." Aiden rumpled the top of Sebastian's hair. "Of course they do. I'm still oldest." He nodded to Duncan. "Come by some night. My wife, Abigail, would love to meet you." Duncan nodded as Aiden took his leave. Sebastian made to follow, but lingered for a moment. "Meet me at the bridge in 3 hours," he whispered, but didn't wait for an answer as he followed his brother out. The house had filled with people who had come to comfort the Firths in their grief, and Duncan felt that he could slip away without too much worry. If something needed to be done, then there were more than enough helping hands nearby. He made haste to the bridge, although he hadn't taken a horse, and it was a long walk. It gave him time to think and to anticipate. It had been 4 days since he'd last seen Sebastian, and over a week since they'd last had an opportunity to make love. His insides whirred with the thought that Sebastian would be waiting for him. Probably fishing while he waited, Duncan thought. He was quite good at catching the trout in the stream, and on several occasions Duncan had surprised Rona with fish. A very welcome exchange for a few pilfered apples, Duncan thought. He could imagine him now, standing on the bank with his fishing pole in his capable hands, one finger on the line, and ever so sensitive to the merest hint of a trout nibble. Very sensitive fingers, Duncan thought, and flushed happily with the memory of how clever Sebastian had become with his hands of late. By the time he reached the bridge, early dusk had touched the sky, and Duncan was sad to think that they wouldn't have much time to meet before he would have to hurry away or risk being lost out in the dark. Sebastian was waiting for him, but he wasn't fishing. No, he was pacing the length of the bridge. Upon seeing Duncan, he waved and hurried over. "Duncan, thank you for coming," he said, his breath tinged with fear. "What's wrong?" Duncan immediately searched the area. No one was near. "Is it your brother? Did something happen?" No, not that." Sebastian had been pulling Duncan along towards the other side of the bridge, but he stopped for a moment. "I think Aiden liked you a lot." "He seemed quite nice," Duncan said. "I wondered if he knew." "I haven't told him, I swear," Sebastian said, eyes grown huge. "He might know, anyway." Sheepishly, he hung his head for a moment. "All my coming in late, and how I've mentioned you. I try not to, but I slip, because you're always in my thoughts." Sebastian took a deep breath. "But we need to worry about that later. I found something. Something terrible." He tugged at Duncan again, and Duncan followed, worry hitching in his chest. Aiden did know, he thought. It was only a matter of time until... Sebastian stopped and pointed. "Look!" Duncan looked and took a step back. Turnip Bone's grave had been disturbed. "Grave robbers," he said. He walked around looking at each grave in turn. "Look, Elspeth's has been disturbed also." He clenched his hands. "Who would dare rob this place? Who knows they're here?" He looked to Sebastian, who looked stricken. "We'll find them out and make them return the valuables, I swear." "That's not it," Sebastian whispered. "Whoever did this, they did it for another reason." "What?" "There aren't any valuables in their graves. At least nothing of any true value. Not enough to go to the trouble of digging." Sebastian's expression was one of worry and fright. "Damn your books! They're just stories. They aren't real. Turnip Bones is a wonderful tale, but he isn't real either. These graves have been robbed." Sebastian shook his head and backed away. He glanced to the sky. "I have to go." Duncan took a step forward. "Sebastian, stay inside after dark. Lock the doors." Sebastian took off like the ravens of the underworld were flying at him. Duncan growled in frustration. He looked carefully at the graves again. They were both disturbed, with fresh dirt turned over. Elspeth's looked worse, as if someone had dug at it for quite a time. Grave robbers. Duncan started the walk back to the farmhouse. Probably they were not local people, although they'd have to somehow have gained knowledge of the cemetery location. Coldness went through him. Outsiders, and poor Katie Firth drowned in the whisper stream. Grave robbers and murderers, then. He quickened his pace for home. When he arrived there, the lights were on, and the very last bit of twilight showed the path. He ran up the steps and into the kitchen, where both Rona and Eller turned to stare at him. "Grave robbers," he said breathlessly. "Glory be." Rona shook her head and pulled a chair out for Duncan to sit in. "Take a moment to catch your breath, then explain yourself." Eller chewed on the end of his pipe and squinted at Duncan. "Sebastian McKay noticed it and showed me. Graves on the McKay property have been dug into. The soil is turned over." Duncan stood back up and went to the coffee pot on the stove. "Recently. I think whoever disturbed the graves might be responsible for Katie." Rona and Eller stared at him. Eller nodded. "Might be." He rounded the table and dropped into a chair. "Thieves, then, and killers. Perhaps Katie heard them sneaking through the town, or saw them, and they..." "Hush, El." Rona twisted her apron in her fingers. "Such words!" "It's a possibility, Rona. It has to be said." Eller pointed the end of his corncob pipe at Duncan. "Tomorrow, first thing, I will go into town and speak with the constable. Probably he'll want to go and see." "Which ones were they? Seems I recall the McKays have several cemeteries on their land." "William and Elspeth McKays," Duncan said. Rona hissed and made the sign of the cross. Eller put his pipe back in his mouth and clamped down on it tight. Then he got up and refilled his own coffee cup from the pot, grumbling under his breath. "Hush, Eller," Rona exclaimed. "Don't be saying such things. It isn't good to speak ill of the dead." Duncan looked between his cousins. "What things?" Rona just shook her head, her mouth a thin line. "Let's eat dinner, shall we?" She started to set the table. After dinner, Eller went out onto the porch to smoke his pipe. Duncan followed him out into the cool late summer night. It was cloudy, and only the moon poked through. The stars were obscured. Eller grunted in greeting, but didn't say anything more. Duncan waited a few minutes, staring out into the darkness along with his cousin. Then he asked, "What did you say inside?" "Rona is right," Eller said. "Best not to say things sometimes." Duncan leaned against the railing, hands clasped. "It's the graves, isn't it? You think..." Eller shrugged. "Could be. Doesn't seem a reason for it, though. Turnipbones took care of the business he needed to, and went back into the earth." "You really believe that?" Another shrug. "I believe it enough to let the dead alone." He grunted and turned over his pipe to tamp out the tobacco. "Tomorrow I'll go see the constable. Most likely it is grave robbers who'd heard a good tale and thought there were riches." They both went inside and to bed, but Duncan lay in his bed for a long time looking into the darkness, imagining. The next day, Duncan watched as Eller set off to see the constable. Duncan had seen the man, Constable Frazee, on occasion. He was usually highly visible at the fairs, keeping trouble at a simmer, as folks sometimes had too good a time. But he had aught little other opportunity to meet the man. Eller vouched for him, but Duncan was reserving judgment. He'd see how the man reacted when Eller brought him back to look at the graves. In the meantime, there was wood to be chopped and stacked. Winter was looming closer every day. It was close to noon when Eller finally came back to the house, and without the constable. He had a gray look to him, and a strange set to his shoulders, and when he dismounted, Duncan could finally see that he was near trembling. "Eller?" Duncan asked, approaching quickly. "What's happened?" Eller rubbed his face. "Let's go inside and have Rona fix us some tea." Duncan nodded and quickly took care of the horse before following Eller inside. Rona already had the kettle whistling. Eller went to the side cupboard and withdrew a flask. He set it on the table. "Brandy?" Duncan asked. "Yep." Eller put a dollop into each of the mugs, and then Rona poured the tea in from the teapot. Eller slugged down half of the scalding liquid. "Enough," Rona scolded. "Tell us what happened." Eller turned sad eyes upon them both. "One of the Annies has been drowned." The chair scraped and fell over backwards as Duncan stood in haste. "No!" He stood while Eller finished his story, and Rona looked on with her lips pressed tightly together. It was early this morning. The girls had gone to pick the last of the summer berries before the day became too hot. Annie Murray says it was a monster, that a monster reared up along the banks and attacked them both, twice as tall as a normal man, and broader, with the strength of an ox. They screamed and ran, and the monster grabbed for Annie Eth and hit Annie Murray in the head. She says she doesn't know what happened until she woke up sometime later and the monster was gone and Annie Eth was in the stream. The poor girl tried to get her friend out, and when she couldn't, she ran home, soaked to the skin and hysterical. Duncan shook his head. "A monster?" He started to pace. "Did you talk with Constable Frazee?" "He's coming out here as soon as he can." Eller finished off the dregs of tea in his mug. "You and I should go down there now and look at these graves." "It can't be true. A monster?" Duncan stopped, cast imploring looks at them both, and paced again. "It can't be." "Why?" Rona asked quietly. "Because you've never seen such a thing before? The world is stranger than you'll let it be, Duncan MacLeod." Duncan stopped. "Rona, I..." She held up a hand, and Duncan noted that her usually steady hand trembled. "You'd better get going." Duncan and Eller went quickly to the bridge and across it. Duncan was not surprised to see Aiden and Sebastian also in the little cemetery. Eller waved and shouted a hello. They approached the area, which still showed signs of being disturbed. "You've heard, then?" Eller asked. "This morning," Aiden replied. "Sebastian told me about the graves. I had to come to see." He frowned. "I don't know quite what to make of it." Duncan tried to catch Sebastian's attention, but he was infuriatingly elusive and kept staring at the churned earth. Sebastian's hair fell across his face, and Duncan couldn't even see the expression there. Eller shrugged. "Way I see it, either someone has gone to a lot of trouble, or we've got a lot of trouble. But why now? Aiden asked anxiously. There's no reason for him to do these things. It could just be a coincidence, Duncan suggested. Aiden looked at him. I suppose. Eller took out his pipe, tamped in new tobacco, and lit it. It took several puffs before the tobacco caught. He chewed on the end of his pipe for a moment, and then looked to Aiden. I guess the only thing to do is keep a watch on it. Aiden nodded. He's ours, so we'll do it. Eller nodded. Call if you need help. He looked to Duncan and gestured for him to follow. Duncan did, frustrated that Sebastian still refused to look at him. Nothing for us to do, Eller said as they walked back. It's McKay land, a McKay responsibility. Course, we'll load the guns when we get back, just in case. Duncan agreed, and he promised himself to make sure to carry his blade with him at all times. He'd always made sure a blade was close, but unseen, since it was unusual to carry around in these parts. But with the threat of thieves and murderers around, if it were noticed, it would be more easily explainable. It was another several whirlwind days of activity. Having gone through it earlier in the week, though, it became easier to follow the rote machinations of preparing for the wake and burial. Duncan's arms ached from beating more rugs, and his stomach ached from eating rich food and too much of it, and his heart ached from the loss of the vibrant girl he'd been fond of and had flirted with. Annie Murray was a pale gray version of herself. She sat around, fingers busy at ripping apart whatever she was able to get a hold of, and ribbons and fabric flew like snow about her lap. Her hair had lost its luster, and Duncan wondered if he remembered correctly that she had dimples. The day of the wake, he made his condolences, and again found a place to sit, this time in a small alcove out of the way. He could respond if called, but otherwise he could rest there unnoticed and undisturbed. He looked out into the room, and again the Maccabees were the first family to arrive. Duncan tucked himself back into the alcove and hoped that Margaret would pass him by. Duncan! Duncan pulled back and saw that Lady Maccabee, what was her name, was addressing him. Yes, Mrs. Maccabee. She touched his shoulder gently. I'm so sorry about this. I know how much you loved her. Duncan nodded. She was a bonny girl. We're all going to miss her. I know it might be too soon. She was cut off by the arrival of her daughter. Duncan! Margaret threw herself onto his lap and burst into tears. He patted her on the back and tried to make soothing noises as Mrs. Maccabee gave him a knowing smile and drifted away. He groaned, but turned his attention to comforting Margaret, who sobbed and sniffled, but in a most becoming and charming way. When at last Duncan had soothed her, and she only gave an occasional sobbing hiccup, Duncan noticed that off in a far corner, Sebastian was watching him with a hooded expression. "Duncan, you're such a dear," Margaret said. "You help my heart." She touched one small, dainty hand to her breast. "It's nothing," Duncan said. "No, but it is something," she insisted, "and a rare gift to be able to comfort." She leaned in closer, her lips parted and her eyes closed. Sighing, he pushed her away and out of the alcove. "Margaret." But, she turned luminous eyes on him. "Why can't you love me?" He put his fingers under her chin. "I like you very much. You're a sweet girl. Just not the girl for me." Sadly, Margaret pulled away and left, tears streaking down her face again. The moment she was gone, Duncan ducked out of the alcove and grabbed Sebastian, pushing and dragging him over there. Hidden, Duncan ran his fingers over the back of Sebastian's hands and fingers. He could smell the faintest scent of apples, and it signaled to his body, causing him much interest. Sebastian glanced out of the alcove, then rubbed his shoulder against Duncan's. "Why do I always seem to see or hear about you with Margaret Maccabee?" "Because I'm irresistible," Duncan whispered, "to the fairer sex." Duncan grinned. "And only nigh near irresistible to the stronger sex." Sebastian flashed him a grin. "I like the idea of stronger sex," he whispered. Like a fox, his smile was full of teeth. "Meet me in the north orchard tonight," he said softly, and was gone again into the room full of people. Duncan sighed, frustrated, and settled down to wait out the rest of the day. It was early evening by the time Duncan escorted Rona and Eller home again. He glanced at the sky, which held the threat of a late-night rainfall, and loped out to the orchard as soon as Rona and Eller had become busied with their own tasks. He covered the ground quickly, but there was only a sliver of light left when he saw the lone shadow leaning against the tree. Sebastian turned and waved, the other hand holding a half-eaten apple, which he promptly threw away before he advanced. They met next to an apple-laden tree branch and hungrily kissed each other, hands roaming and plucking at catches and buttons. Sebastian tasted of sun-warmed apple, and Duncan felt dizzy with the tartness, and how much he craved more of the taste, curling the back of his tongue. Duncan buried his face in the crook of Sebastian's neck and pressed himself against his lover. Fresh scents of ripeness assailed him, and the warmth that radiated out of the body next to him spiraled past reason until there was nothing but love in his heart and the sensation of apples filling all his senses. Duncan knew he was going to have to explain something to Rona and Eller. They surely had noticed that he'd been gone all night long, having slept in the orchard and woken covered with dew and chilly everywhere that Sebastian was not draped over him. They'd eaten apples for breakfast, of course, and Duncan thought he might live another 300 years and not have his fill of apples. They'd parted with promises to meet again that afternoon by the stream. As usual, Sebastian was talking of trout. Duncan went straight to the barn to start on his day's activities. He had another cord of wood that needed cutting and stacking. With the apple harvest set to begin in another week or two, it was a sure sign that winter was soon to follow. The MacLeod farmhouse wasn't overly large, but the winter was long, and the winter was cold, and every piece of firewood kept the winter at bay. Duncan bent to his task. It was late afternoon when the carriage came up the road. Duncan groaned, for he recognized it as the Maccabee carriage. Either Tom and Lady Maccabee had come to convince him of their daughter's virtues, or the daughter had come to do it herself. He finished stacking what he could, then went to meet the carriage. Margaret Maccabee emerged, resplendent with perfume and dressed in brocaded silk. She smiled shyly at him, and he held out a hand to help her down. Duncan could see the farmhouse door from where he stood, and both Rona and Eller had come and then vanished back into the house. Cowards, he thought wryly, and then turned to deal with the situation yet again. "Hello, Duncan," Margaret said breathily. "Hello," Duncan said. "You've come for a visit. Shall I fetch Rona?" "No, no. It's you I wanted to talk to." Duncan took a step away. "I've been working," he apologized. "Perhaps you want to wait inside. I'll only be a moment." "No, that's not necessary. I mean, after all, we are going to be married. I'm sure to see you in working condition many times." Coyly, she looked him up and down, then settled her gaze on the ground. "No, Margaret, we aren't going to marry." "But we are," she insisted. "Mother said she talked to you and found out what it was that was keeping you from being able to love me." "What?" Duncan's head swam. "He'd talked to Lady Maccabee?" "Yes, she said she'd taken care of it, that I should go see you, that it would all be fine now." She impishly flounced in her dress. "And here I am." She grabbed a handful of his shirt. "And here you are." Duncan extricated himself from her fingers. "When did this happen? Your mother and I talked?" "Of course." Now Margaret was becoming confused. "At Annie's wake. She said that she finally understood what it was that stood between us and that she'd taken care of it." Duncan's heart froze. In horror, he stared at the slip of a girl standing in front of him, dressed in silk and fluttering her dainty hands in the air as she spoke. "Your mother," he said, and the words barely escaped his throat. The calm and serene Lady Maccabee, who tried to convince him with cool logic and by appeal to a man's sense of security, a fine home, a good job, a beautiful wife. He took a step back. "What's wrong?" Margaret stopped in front of him and stared, head tilted. "You have a strange look." Duncan glanced to the sky. Late afternoon, too late. He turned and ran, and heard Margaret chase after. He didn't care. His lungs were burning from the effort by the time he reached the bridge, and he could see dark shapes by the stream's edge. "Sebastian!" he called, somehow finding enough air in his chest. One figure by the stream looked up, and Duncan almost thought he heard his own name called. He rushed onward and threw himself at the figures, which was like hurling himself upon solid rock. The thing turned to look at him, although Duncan wondered how it could see, since there was nothing about its head that resembled a face. The stench of something rotting too long underground reeked through the air, and Duncan clenched his jaw to keep from vomiting. Slimy, fleshy white appendages in the shape of skeletal bones came out of the tatters of its clothing and held an unconscious Sebastian in its grip. Duncan crawled to his feet, dragging his sword from its hidden place along his side. The odor of raw, fetid vegetable overwhelmed his nose and clawed down his throat, and Duncan forced himself not to retch. The thing had turned back to Sebastian and was taking him into the stream. Duncan roared and attacked, slicing at it, and one arm came off. The creature twisted and backhanded Duncan, sending him flying, and he knew his back was broken when he landed. The creature howled, if that could ever describe the hideous, sickening, wet flesh against soaked ground sound that it made, and a moment later, amidst the cracking of bones, its arms strengthened and grew again. The smell of decaying vegetable increased, suffusing the air like a thick fog. Desperately, Duncan began to crawl forward, his hands scraping against the ground, his lower half dragging behind him. He was almost there when he felt his legs again and crawled to his feet, unsteady still, but frantic. He made another attack with his sword, aiming for the head of the thing, which sensed the movement and turned. Still, the slash hit home, and the top half of the monster's head was diagonally cleaved away. It slid away with a squelching sound, and the odor of decomposing turnips rose to a suffocating amount. The monster staggered back, gurgling like a wounded animal, and Duncan took the opportunity to lunge forward and drag Sebastian's head above the water. He wasn't moving, but Duncan didn't dare put his sword down to free both hands. The thing shook itself and then charged, its slimy appendages hitting Duncan square in the chest, even as he thrust his sword straight forward where he thought its heart should be. Down they both went, into the depth of the stream, and the ever-cold water rushed into Duncan's ears and throat. Somehow he managed to still keep hold of his weapon, even as he tumbled in the current. When he finally caught his footing again, he rose to the surface and heard only screaming. Turnip Bones was on the bank and was leaving, moving in a heavy-limbed, dragging manner, back towards its grave. Duncan glanced up and saw that Margaret stood horrified at the top of the hill crest and was screaming and screaming. He ignored her, sheathed his sword to leave both hands free, and quickly splashed through the water until he reached Sebastian. His dark hair was fanned out around his face, which was unnaturally free of thought or emotion. Duncan's insides clenched, and he vowed he would see the play of expression across that wonderful face again, and he dragged Sebastian up on the bank and began to force the water from his lungs. A time later, strong hands came around his shoulders and pulled him away. Around him, he could still hear the droning of Margaret's screams, and Duncan raised his sight from Sebastian's motionless form to that of his brother. Aiden went to work on Sebastian, but there was no more water to free, and he sat down heavily next to his brother's body. No! Duncan refused to believe he had not arrived in time. He turned Sebastian on his side, but only a slow trickle of water came from his mouth, and a strong hand on his arm gave him pause. "He's gone," Aiden said roughly, tears in his eyes and on his cheeks. Duncan looked down again at the young man in his arms, dark hair plastered to his head, and gray eyes gone flat and lifeless, and his heart filled with rage. He gently cradled Sebastian to the ground and stood, then looked to the cemetery. He ran again, throat burned raw, until he reached the tiny sanctuary. Turnip Bones was not yet in his grave. He was still shuffling along, as if once his murderous intent had been fulfilled, he had no reason for energy or existence. Duncan clenched his hands, frustrated that he could do nothing with the monster on holy ground, and then realized that someone else was standing near the tall fieldstone marker. A woman, Lady Maccabee, and she was holding something strange. "You!" Duncan exploded, moving forward, threatening and angry. "Turnip bones!" she screamed, holding one hand high, and the monster turned at the sound of her voice. Duncan's hate and disgust for this woman, who would do anything necessary to make sure that her darling daughter had everything she ever dreamed, overwhelmed him. He ducked wide, then went under the monster's powerful frame and came face to face with his enemy. He hit her hand, and the force of it sent the thing she'd been holding into the air and down, where it landed a few feet away. Turnip Bones made a hideous, screeching noise behind him as both Duncan and Lady Maccabee dove for the thing. Duncan was faster, and he grasped the object, pulled it to his chest, and rolled away. He opened his hand and stared at the tiny thing, a slim piece of dirty, yellow-gray bone knotted around by a lock of dun-colored hair. He looked up at Lady Maccabee, who was on her knees and cursing him. A moment later, she was knocked over by Turnip Bones and into the fieldstone marker of Elspeth MacKay with a sickening crunch. He picked her up by an arm and started dragging her out of the cemetery, her head twisted at an impossible angle. Duncan let it happen and left the thin bone and hair at the gravesite before he followed at a discreet distance. Turnip Bones dragged Lady Maccabee's body into the stream, not far from the area where they had earlier fought. From the corner of his eye, Duncan could see that more MacKay brothers had arrived, and he resolutely focused his attention on Turnip Bones, not ready yet to deal. Turnip Bones pushed Lady Maccabee under the water, causing only a slight tumult in the stream, and then released her. Her body tumbled away with the rush of the water. Again, the monster sloughed back to the cemetery, its gait slow and cumbersome. The thick rot of turnip stink permeated the air, and Duncan followed again, numb inside. A few of the brothers must have seen, for he had the sense that he was not alone in following Turnip Bones back to his grave, although they hung far behind. When it reached its wife's grave, Turnip Bones stooped to pick up the bone and lock of hair, then reached its root-wide arm down into the earth of her grave, and when it pulled its arm up again, it was empty. It stumbled along to its own resting place and eased itself back underground, disturbing the soil very little, and then suddenly it was gone. Duncan waited to be sure the stillness of the cemetery was certain, then fled back to the edge of the stream, where Sebastian was still laying. Aiden said something he could not hear, and the people gathered there parted away, and Duncan sat down next to Sebastian, took his cold hand in his own, and cried until he knew no more. Mythos watched Duncan carefully. Duncan stared down into his coffee cup and was quiet. There were no tears in his eyes that Mythos could see, but by the stillness of his body and the bleak look on his face, Mythos knew that remembering the tale had brought back upon him all the sorrow and loss that had been felt originally. Mythos went to him and wrapped his arms around him, not letting him bear the memories alone. They sat like that for a long while, until finally Duncan's body relaxed and he leaned his head back. His eyes were wet, and he wiped at them with the back of his hand. "What happened then? Did you stay?" Mythos tried to remember if he'd read this in the Chronicles. He doubted the Watcher detailing this had anything more interesting to say than MacLeod took up the farming life, since no immortals had come along during the entire period. "Not for long, no," Duncan replied slowly. "I finished helping Rona and Eller prepare for winter. Whenever anyone came to the house, I left and went to the orchard. The apple harvest came in beautifully. The apples were sweet and juicy. Sebastian would have enjoyed stealing them off the branches." He smiled lightly, but the smile didn't reach his eyes. "As soon as the first snow flew, I left." "Where did you rest, Sebastian?" "In the north orchard." Duncan did smile fully then, and the bleakness in his expression faded. "It was a hard decision. He loved fishing so much, I thought he'd want to see the trout every spring. But..." Duncan's smile faded. "I couldn't bear for him to be so close to where..." He looked away. Rona and Eller didn't mind, and Aiden convinced his family. "I think Aiden always knew." Mythos nodded. "Probably. Sounds as if Sebastian went home with a song in his heart the very first day you met. Aiden sounds like a good man. He was, Duncan agreed. Would you want to return? To visit? Mythos asked, and wondered if the orchard was still there. Knowing Duncan, it probably was currently amongst his properties. Sebastian's rest would never be disturbed as long as Duncan lived. I've been recently, Duncan murmured, and grabbed his coffee, took a sip, and grimaced. Here, let me. Mythos took the cup and headed for the sink, grabbing the now cold tureen of soup along the way. He began to dump everything down the drain. All your hard work, Duncan protested, finally rising from his position on the couch. It's just soup. Mythos glanced at the clock. It's not yet midnight. I know a pizza place that stays open late. He took a quick look out the window. Still raining, but not nearly as hard. I'll even let you pick the toppings this time. Doesn't matter, Duncan said as he went to the coat rack. It's not the food, it's the company. Mythos put the soup bowls to dry in the rack, and his attention was caught by the innocuous bowl of apples sitting nearby. Always apples, he thought, and could not remember a time when there hadn't been a bowl full of apples on offer in Duncan's residences. True, Mythos agreed as he put his raincoat on, and they went out into the drizzle. The end.